welcome to the Tech Meme Ride Home for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. I'm Brian McCullough. Today, the big DMA deadline is mere hours away. A big Twitter-related lawsuit has arrived that I kind of can't believe took this long. Nothing releases a pretty compelling cheap phone. Waymo is bringing its driverless taxi service to Los Angeles. And is Linux quietly having a moment? Here's what you missed today in the world of tech. Thursday, March 7th is the day that all the big tech platforms, Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, ByteDance, Meta, even Microsoft, have to comply with that new European Digital Markets Act, or face fines. Well, Google finally outlined its updates to comply with the DMA, search changes to prioritize large intermediaries and aggregators, new tools for app developers, and more. Quoting Reuters, changes to search results mean large intermediaries and aggregators will get more traffic, while hotels, airlines, merchants, and restaurants will get less, Google said in a blog post. Users will be asked for their consent to allow Google to share their data across Google products and services. App developers will be able to use alternative billing systems and not just Google Play's billing, while a new program will allow them to directly lead European users outside the app to promote their products. Google will also launch data portability software in Europe this week, making it easier for developers to move user data to a third-party app or service, end quote. And quoting TechCrunch. Today, Google is also announcing that it stopped the default linking of personal data across user accounts for certain of its products, which it's previously used to power personalization, in quotes, of content and ads. This pro-privacy change is happening because the DMA bans the use of people's data for advertising without their consent. But Google isn't going gentle into this data goodnight. The ad tech giant is the DMA gatekeeper with by far the largest number of regulated platforms, 8 in total, namely Google Maps, Google Play, Google Shopping, Google Ads, Chrome, Android, Google Search, and YouTube, which is why it's setting out such a smorgasbord of changes across multiple products. Yesterday, TikTok, which is also in the scope of the DMA, announced its own API for data portability. All the gatekeepers will have to do this. EU lawmakers hope the regulation's data portability requirements will fire up competition against gatekeepers by facilitating service switching and or multi-homing, making it easier for users to port their data to third-party app or services, for businesses to get access to data so they can cater to users. Despite a high level of DMA risk for Google, on account of how many of its services are in scope of the regulation, at times, its blog post spins the idea it's already well on the way to being compliant with the regulation, as it suggests it already fulfills some of the requirements, such as the ability for users of its mobile platform Android to install alternative app stores and sideload apps, end quote. Instagram now lets users edit DMs up to 15 minutes after sending them, along with the ability to pin 3 messaging threads to the top of their inbox and save their favorite stickers. Quoting TechCrunch, the ability to edit your DMs lets you fix a typo or change things around if your message doesn't quite sound right. To edit a message, you need to press and hold it, and then choose Edit from the drop-down menu. Once you edit a message, the purple text bubble will have an edited label on top of it to notify the other person that the message has been changed. The feature works similar to Apple's edit feature for iMessage, which launched nearly 2 years ago. As for the option to pin a chat to the top of your inbox, you will be able to do so by swiping left or tapping and holding on the chat, then tapping pin. You can choose to unpin a thread at any time. The feature can be used to quickly access the chats that you visit often, but it could also be used as a way to remind yourself to come back to a specific conversation at a later time. Instagram also recently started allowing all users to turn read receipts off for all of their chats or specific ones. You can turn off read receipts for all chats by going into your account settings, tapping messages and story replies, and then clicking on the Show Read Receipts button and then toggling them off. The company first started testing the feature back in November, end quote. Apple says that after a forthcoming software update, the M3 14-inch MacBook Pro will be able to drive 2 external displays with its lid closed, just like the M3 MacBook Airs announced yesterday. Quoting 9to5Mac, No details yet on which software update, although macOS Sonoma 14.4 is still in developer and public beta. The M3 MacBook Air in 13 and 15-inch sizes hit stores on Friday. Both the MacBook Air and MacBook Pro have an interesting recent history with multi-display support. Before now, Apple has limited external monitor support to a single monitor, even if the lid is closed for M1 through M3 chips. Actual multi-display support was limited to the M1 Pro and up. The Mac Mini was a bit of an exception. The M1 and M2 variants feature an HDMI port capable of driving a second display. In a sense, the new laptop feature catches up with the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini has no built-in display to drive and works with up to two external monitors. Now, that's true for M3 laptops as well. Prior to switching to Apple Silicon, modern MacBook Airs supported two external displays as well as the built-in display. Apple still hasn't prioritized that level of support for the MacBook Air line. However, the feature has been available since day one for Pro, Max, and Ultra variations of Apple's M chips for the Mac. For power users, the upgraded versions of Apple Silicon chips still offer the advantage of being able to utilize the built-in display while using two external displays, end quote. Twitter's former CEO, CFO, legal chief, and general counsel are suing Elon Musk over more than $128 million in what they say are unpaid severance payments, as well as Musk's claim that he had cause to fire them when he took over Twitter. Quoting the Journal, the executives who led the company during a lengthy and at times hostile takeover process in which they sued the billionaire to follow through with the acquisition after Musk changed his mind, say he fired them, citing gross negligence and willful misconduct, which they deny. Musk said at the time they were fired for cause and he didn't have to pay severance. The plaintiffs are Parag Agrawal, Twitter's former chief executive, Ned Segal, its former chief financial officer, Vijay Gaddy, its former chief legal officer, and Sean Edgett, its former general counsel. This is the Musk playbook, to keep the money he owes other people and force them to sue him, the group alleges. Even in defeat, Musk can impose delay, hassle, and expense on others less able to afford it. Because Musk decided he didn't want to pay plaintiffs' severance benefits, he simply fired them without reason, then made up fake cause and appointed employees of his various companies to uphold his decision. The group continues in the complaint. The executives say they were told multiple reasons for their firings, including one related to Twitter's payment of so-called success fees to attorneys who worked on the acquisition. Other reasons include alleged corporate waste and the handling of employee retention bonuses and severance plans, according to the lawsuit. The plaintiffs say those reasons are pretextual and insupportable. They also say the decisions in question were approved by Twitter's board at the time. In the complaint filed Monday, the executives cite a passage from Walter Isaacson's biography of Musk, which says Musk closed the deal a day early because he thought it would prevent those executives from having their stock options vest when the market opened the next morning. There was a, quote, $200 million differential in the cookie jar between closing tonight and doing it tomorrow morning, the book quotes Musk as saying, end quote. Nothing has debuted the 6.7-inch Phone 2A, its first budget phone with a 5,000 milliamp hour battery and a MediaTek chip, starting at £319. Comes with 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage, which that's a pretty good deal. Quoting The Verge, the 2A is Nothing's third phone and its first attempt at a truly inexpensive device. And it's very budget-friendly. The Phone 2A goes on sale today starting at £319 or €329 for a model with 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage. A 12-gigabyte, 256-gigabyte version will cost £349 or €379. Pre-orders open today and the phone will ship on March 12th. The 256-gigabyte variant will be sold in the U.S. for $349, but there's a catch. It's only available through a developer program, and the phone will only work on T-Mobile. That's our loss, because Nothing has created a device that really stands out from the crowd. The design is unmistakably Nothing, from the transparent back panel to the stylish monochrome UI. The centered camera module includes a 50-megapixel main with optical stabilization, which is very rare in phones under $500. There's a 50-megapixel ultra-wide and a 32-megapixel front-facing camera. Three light strips around the rear cameras make up the Phone 2A's glyph interface, bringing over familiar features from the Phone 2 like flip to glyph to quickly silence the phone and instead be notified via its flashing lights. Given all of the above, $349 is an extremely reasonable asking price. Sure, the outer frame and back panel are plastic, it's only splash resistant, and the glyph interface is still mostly a curiosity, but It's only $349. It's easier to understand why certain features like a more robust IP rating aren't here, more so than on the $599 phone 2. That price tag also makes it easier to appreciate what is here. The Glyph interface feels like a fun extra, and the informative always-on display is one of my favorites on any phone. There's NFC for contactless payments, which isn't always the case on budget phones, and if you're unsure exactly where to tap the device, you can just look. It's right there on the back of the phone. Likewise, Nothing's minimalist UI feels almost like a luxury in this category where you'll occasionally find the worst kind of bloatware. It's almost too good to be true, and if you live in the US, that's kind of the case. The Phone 2A is only available through Nothing's developer program, which is open to anyone, but the device only works on T-Mobile's network. It supports the carrier's N41 band, which is really the backbone of its 5G network, but Verizon's and AT&T's 5G networks aren't supported. Even if you're on T-Mobile, it seems a little dicey to rely on the Phone 2A as a daily driver without full support on LTE and low-band 5G. Disappointing, but hey, cool phones skipping the US, that's nothing new, end quote.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
California's roads regulator has approved Waymo's proposal to expand its fared driverless robotaxi services to parts of Los Angeles, as well as more of the San Francisco Peninsula, in its biggest regional expansion yet. Quoting TechCrunch, the approval removes the last barrier for the Alphabet company to charge for rides in those expanded areas. Importantly, it opens up new territory for Waymo in one of the country's largest cities and unlocks a route to San Francisco International Airport, which is located south of the city. Waymo has operated a commercial service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week throughout the city of San Francisco since receiving approval from the commission in August. Waymo is also allowed to give people free driverless rides in parts of Los Angeles, but until today's approval, it was not able to charge for rides in Los Angeles, end quote. Waymo says 50,000 people have joined the waitlist to use the new service in that city. Finally today, something really nerdy for you. According to StatCounter, Linux hit a 4.03% share of the desktop OS market in February. This is after it took Linux 30 years to achieve a 3% market share, a level that it hit just back in June of last year. So I know, desktop market share, who cares, but 1% market share grab in just 8 months? Is the dream of the 90s alive for some reason? Quoting Linuxiac, the rise in Linux's popularity can be attributed to several factors. Firstly, the open source nature of Linux has made it a favorite choice among developers, IT professionals, and tech enthusiasts who appreciate the flexibility and control it offers. Additionally, the security and stability of Linux have been key selling points, making it an attractive option for both personal and professional use. However, while having great features is important, an attractive presentation often captures attention first, something both Windows and macOS understand well. This is precisely where the top Linux desktop distros have made remarkable strides, significantly enhancing their appearance and user-friendliness in recent years. With the continuous improvement and user-friendly designs of distributions such as Ubuntu, Fedora, Mint, and many others, Linux has become more accessible to a broader audience, including those who may not be as technically inclined. Is the much-anticipated Linux on the desktop year upon us? Well, not exactly. The truth is, seeing Linux dominate desktops anytime soon is quite unlikely, but then again, Achieving widespread desktop dominance was never the primary aim of Linux. It's more of an ongoing, lighthearted debate among enthusiasts than a serious expectation. However, it's worth noting and celebrating that Linux desktop usage has surpassed 4% and even saw growth of 1% in just the last 8 months, a feat that was beyond the expectations of many. So let's take a moment to appreciate this achievement. It may seem small to some, but it's a significant stride forward for those who hold Linux dear, end quote. I will make note of the fact that as I'm recording this, Bitcoin has apparently surpassed its all-time high, briefly touching $69,000 a coin. Don't know if there's much else I can tell you about that, but we'll see tomorrow. Quick note that tomorrow's show might be a tad late, maybe 2 p.m. Eastern instead of noon, like usual. Just a bunch of stuff piled up tomorrow. And quick ask from the Hive Mind, have they stopped manufacturing Heath bars? Heath, the toffee candy bars. First, they disappeared from my corner bodega, but then in the last few weeks, I can't find them in any bodega in Park Slope. I've been trying to look every time I stop into a bodega to get something. Is it just my neighborhood? Is it just Brooklyn? Is it New York City? Next time you stop in to get gas, maybe later today or whatever, head inside and see if they have Heath bars. I only discovered Heath bars for the first time like 6 months ago, and it would suck if I got into the Heath hive right before it ended. Talk to you tomorrow.